and I love her, so I give you a lady.
Thank you, Lynn. And I want to thank the committee for inviting me. I'm Elaine Boone from Roswell.
Hi.
And I want to thank my sponsor, Barbara, who just left for an emergency, and Catherine for their part in getting me up here and making the last year of my life a living hell. Thank you. I'm not in that. I'm serious. So I want to, the very first thing I want to say is that this is the hardest thing I have ever agreed to do, and the most difficult thing that I ever do. Speaking in public is a big no-no for me. It goes against my mission statement for life. Stay off the radar. And it's really hard for me because not only did I live my life with that goal in mind, I hate my story. My story is a non-normal Al-Anon story. And before I start sharing it with you, I want to assure you that I'm aware that I would qualify for any number of programs. I picked Al-Anon. I'm staying. You've got me. But I know that I know I qualify for other stories, other programs. This is the biggest, I've only told my story a couple of times. I've been in the program a long time, but I've only told my story a couple of times. And this is the first time I've ever been recorded when telling my story. And I appreciate the recorders, and I want to thank them for showing up and being here. I've listened to recordings my entire program life. It has meant a huge, it's made a huge contribution to my recovery, and I love it. And when I listen to a recorded story, I always make a picture in my mind of what they look like. I'm always convinced that if I met them, I would know exactly what they look like. So I want to describe myself. To the listening audience that I'm never going to be, I'm never going to meet. I'm 20. I'm 29. I'm 5'9". I've got long strawberry blonde hair, and I'm a knockout. I don't know if you were at the AA International. There was an old timer that got up, and he shared about how painful it was for him to share publicly. It was painful, and it took a lot of courage for him to do that. And he talked about this guy that was struggling, and it was horrible for him. But the guy got up, and no matter how hard it was, he finished. He finished up there, and he said, "I'm just going to stay up until I'm finished. So I'm going to tell you guys, I am going to finish this. I don't know how I'm going to get to the end of it, but I am going to finish it. I was going to start with my closing so I could say I finished." But I've only told my story really, well, a couple other times, but when I first came into the program over 25 years ago, my sponsor then was Catherine, and I don't know how she did it, but But she managed to get me up in front of an Al-Anon meeting to tell my story. And of course, I was horrified, and God knows what the story was I told. I'm sure I wasn't willing to give details and be transparent at that point in my recovery, but she got me up there. And so I was up in this front of this little group of Al-Anons, and I was terrified. I was terrified out of my mind. And what I want you to know about me is I really am a very, very loving, nice person, like Lynn described. I am. I'm really, really nice until I'm not. I am nice most of the time, but if I get stressed out, I would give myself permission to attack you. I'll be crying throughout. That's not okay with me anymore. It's not okay with me to attack you, to teach you how to treat me. When I got up there to tell my story, this poor unfortunate guy from AA wandered into the Al-Anon room, and I told him to get out. It wasn't me being mean, but I was stressed out and anxious, and that's the only way I could handle it back then. But I told him to get out and get in the other room where he belonged. And so he did. He did. He got up and left. And I did that in front of a room full of people. And so I'm very good about making amends now. I'm very good about quickly recognizing when I'm wrong and when I've wronged someone, and it's very easy for me to make amends. I don't want to live with that. But for all these years, I've carried that around. I've never had a chance to make amends. He's a sweet person. And I did that really to more than him. I did it to a few people. But on Thursday night, when I was here and Patty, I was here for Patty's story, and I had prayed about that guy over the years, and I thought, oh gosh, I hope I don't see him around town in a meeting. Could really be awkward. And so Patty was here. Patty loved her story, appreciated it, and when the meeting was over, that guy was sitting in front of me, and he turned around and we recognized each other, and I got to make an amends to him. And thank goodness he'd been working a program over the years. And he was so sweet and loving in the acceptance. And he said he wanted to come back today and hear my story, and he's here. And I just wanted to say, Cecil, I love you. My sponsor says, have your beginning and your end, and let God show up in between. And I hope I get to be like that someday, but I have notes, and I hope God shows up in notes. And and so I want to start out by reading you something from Concept 9, because for me, how my program works is the steps lead me to the ability to be of maximum service. And the expression in the program is that to give it away, you have to give it away to keep it. But in my case, I've had to give it away to have it. My recovery, my real recovery, has come in my service work. Concept 9 reminds us that while not everyone has a leadership role, and when I talk about leadership or role or service work, I'm talking about any service work. I'm in a leadership role and doing service work if I'm being sponsored, if I'm sponsoring, if I'm asked to tell my story, if I'm serving at the area or local level, at the highest level, all members have a personal responsibility for leadership at whatever level they may be. The concept encourages us to participate proactively to the fullest extent of our abilities. To do otherwise would be to neglect an important opportunity for personal growth. In living or having lived in the disease of alcoholism, we may have experienced a style of authoritarian leadership that demanded unquestioning obedience and discouraged thoughtful participation that engaged our best thinking. This experience convinced many of us that we were not capable of leadership, but just as some of us suffered under leadership that was too rigid, others often found themselves floundering without any direction or guidance at all. In either case, many of us had no personal experience with an example of healthy leadership in Al-Anon. We have the opportunity to see healthy leadership in action. Every member of Al-Anon has the potential to be a leader. At all levels of service, members have the opportunity, and I'm going to say obligation, to serve in some leadership role. We don't have to do it alone. There are more experienced members to help us and guide us. As we experience healthy leadership within our fellowship, we may find that our relationships and personal lives will benefit from having vision and being more tolerant, responsible, and flexible. As a result, we have the opportunity to assume leadership in our own lives. And so that's what happened with me. What I really want to tell you about is the last year of my life. The last year of my life has been a transformative year, and I probably grew more the last year than I have the 24 years before. I'm going to give you the Cliff Notes version of my story, though. My sister said I have to. She said you're supposed to be telling your story. I'm what I think is referred to as a big book Al-Anon. So what that means to me is that I meet with a group of women in AA and in Al-Anon, and we get together once a week and we study literature from both programs. And so we get to hear each other in both programs. We get to hear each other share. And we've done that for over 20 years, and we go on retreat together once a year. So once a year, I go on retreat with 50 of my very, very best friends. In our program, in my line of sponsorship, we believe in sponsorship. We all have sponsors, and we believe in a short list. And so we encourage each other to have 4 or 5 people that we talk to on a regular basis. If I have a crisis, I don't want to call you and tell you from point A to B. You know me, and my sponsor is not always going to be available. Right now, she's in the hospital with her son. She's not here with me, but I have enough love and support in this room without her. My program doesn't depend on my sponsor alone. So, I grew up in Tennessee. When I was 2, my brother was 4, my sister wasn't quite born yet. My father abandoned us. It was a coal mining town. We lived in a dilapidated, it should have been condemned shack. So think Appalachian coal mine. That's how I was raised the first, till I was about 7. My entire extended family is Church of Christ, and I think that it's not so much what your religion is as it's just my experience of it. What I heard was women don't talk, and there's no music in the church for sure. And if you don't do it their way, you're going to go to hell. And so that's what I heard from the religious, and it was a very, very prominent part of our upbringing. When I was about 7 years old, my dad came back. He came back to get us and take us back to Fort Lauderdale with him. He was very, very loved member of the family. He was, oh, the prodigal son has come back, and he was my father. And so I was really excited to meet him. And when he got us and took us back to Florida, he turned out to be a really, really mean guy. He was, up until then, my life had been, we'd been poor, but it had been pretty peaceful. So everything changed at that point. We moved to South Florida. And each of us children developed a strategy to survive that. And mine was good, dutiful daughter. And so I was really off the radar. I tried to be quiet. And by the time I was about 9 or 10, I was cooking for the family. My parents were too busy doing other things to be parenting. They didn't like each other and spent a lot of time doing that. And so I was kind of taking care of the household. I was literally parenting my brother and sister. Don't ever do that to your kids. It's not a good idea. It's not good for them. It's not good for me. They resent it. I don't like it. So I was held literally responsible for what they did. And my sister was a brat. And so, like, I'm responsible for her, and she's a brat. And so I was always getting in trouble for what she was doing. She and my sister's here tonight, today. She's finally come into the program, and she really needs it. She wanted my sponsor to sponsor her, and I believe that is because I'm the only person that's gotten into a program of recovery in my family. And so she's had an opportunity over the years to watch what they're doing, what's happening with them, and what I'm doing, what's happening with me. And she's seen my sponsor and my network of my women friends. She's seen them be there for me in a way that my family was never there for me. And you guys loved me into becoming, I've been transformed. And so at some point, I believe that all my girls were always around, and I'm always around my sister, and they kind of loved her into the program. But I think that she was very, very attracted to that. School was a horrible, horrible nightmare for me. I just couldn't stay off the radar enough. I couldn't stand to have any focus. I couldn't stand to have the focus on me, which is odd because I was always focused on me. It was very painful. I didn't have a lot of friends. I didn't have that skill set to know how to make friends and maintain friends, and I just didn't have that skill set. So that's kind of how it went. I was a good, dutiful daughter as long as I could. Things went along until I was able to escape when I was 18 or 19. I got married for the first time. And he was a budding alcoholic and a womanizer. But I was a good, dutiful wife then. We adopted a child. We adopted a little boy. And so I was a good, dutiful daughter, a good, dutiful wife to him as long as I could be. And when I couldn't do it anymore, we got a divorce and I remarried. And that my next husband, husband number two, I married his polar opposite. My second husband couldn't have been more different than my first husband. Steve was not an alcoholic, and he had very good business contacts, and he was entrepreneurial in nature. But his business contacts were drug dealers. And so Patty, on Thursday night, Patty said in her story, when she was with this guy when she was young, she realized that he was a drug dealer, and so she realized he wasn't a good situation, and so she left. She left the guy. I handled it differently. I stayed with him, and I became better at it than he was. So the guy that we worked for, I would love to gloss over this and say it was a moment of poor judgment, but we relocated to a different state to do this line of work. And when we moved, we had no other thought of any other employment other than dealing drugs, and we did it for years and years. And so this guy that we worked for, he said, you know, I thought I was getting you because you happened to be married to the guy I was hiring. Imagine my surprise when you turned out to be the better employee. And really, we did it for a long time, and I didn't wake up one day with a conscience, you know, an attack of conscience of this isn't right. Everybody in our, we were part of a subculture, and everyone was either arrested or on trial to, they were either in jail or going to trial to go to jail. And we knew that we would be next. And we're a couple of the only people that walked away from that without getting arrested. And I would have done it longer if I could have. I loved it. I was good at it. It was one of the first things I was ever really good at. And up until then, I had been a very, very tightly wrapped, good citizen, good girl. Until then, until I wasn't anymore, and so when we were doing that, we played hard and we worked hard, and we when I say drug dealers, what we did really was we moved drugs around. And money and things, and so we moved a lot of drugs around. We warehoused a lot of drugs. I love logistics even then. so we moved a lot of drugs around, but we used a lot of drugs, and I drank. And I would say I drank alcoholically. I drank at the very at least. I drank. I can't think of the word, but I had a problem with it. I did a lot of drugs and I drank a lot. But the thing is, well, before I completely leave this story, what I was going to say is when I left that life. For whatever reason, I was able to put the drugs and alcohol aside, for whatever reason. So that's not the program that I picked. But I'm going to tell you one story My husband said that he wished I would tell a little drunkalog, even though I don't really consider myself. But anyway, so this is from my husband. I'll tell you just one story. So while I was in that business, one trip, I left from Colorado and I flew to Newark, New Jersey, and I bought a new Audi off the showroom floor. And so I was in there buying this car, and the salesman said, "How would you like to pay for this transaction?" And I had a suitcase of money. I paid for it, I think, in 20s. The longest part of that transaction was they had to count that before I could get out of there. I took ownership of the car. I drove it around to a friend's auto body shop, and they dropped the trunk for me. Audis have really big trunks, but this one was huge by the time we got done with it. I was always a little concerned about that car. When I stood back and looked at it from the side, I could see the trunk underneath, behind the wheels. But I took the car, I got it out of the garage, I drove it to South Florida, loaded it up, and drove it back to Colorado, fully loaded. And I didn't usually do that. I didn't drive, I didn't transport drugs as much as I did money. One of my sponsees said, "Are you sure that you can get up in front of that big of a group and tell about this and not risk being arrested? Because I've got some issues and I need my sponsor not to be in jail." So my husband and I walked away from that life. We'd been together for 12 years. When I walked away, I was in horrible, horrible shape. So I was a pretty stressed out type A personality my whole life. But when I walked away from that, my marriage fell apart. I had dragged my son through that, having horrible problems with him. The anxiety level in my life had always been very high, just lots and lots of anxiety. But at that point, I tipped the scale, and my anxiety turned into panic attacks. And when I say panic attacks, I mean emergency room visits. I couldn't leave my house for the better part of a year. I was just in horrible, horrible shape. I left Colorado. I moved to Atlanta, and I brought my son with me. When we got to Atlanta, we were not able to function. Like I said, I put down the drugs and alcohol. But the destructive relationship, the inability to function, and I didn't have the maturity to function in like a normal society setting. I didn't have the skills to be a parent. So very soon, my son and I were in therapy, and she sent my son to rehab, and she sentenced me to Al-Anon. Now, remember, I'm not able to share in groups. I'm not able to be, I'm very anxious in groups. And so the only way I could have ever joined Al-Anon was the threat of, if you don't get some kind of recovery, your son does not stand a chance, he'll die. He's one of the worst cases of addictive personality that I've ever seen. And so I started going to Al-Anon. I checked him into Bronner's at the time. I don't know if they're still around, but I checked him into Bronner's. And keep in mind that as I checked him in, my feeling about it and about Matthew was, is it really that bad? It just doesn't seem like it's that serious. He was the worst case that they had dealt with in that hospital in the memory of anybody that was on staff there at the time. And the therapist said that she put him in treatment as for him as much as for me, because he was huge. He was over 6 feet tall and just a big hulking kid at 16, or I was 16 at the time. And she said, you don't have the sense to know when to shut up. And eventually, he will hurt you. And so I did it as much for you as I did it for him. I started coming to Al-Anon, and I got a sponsor right away. Catherine was my first sponsor. I started working the steps. I had done a lot of self-help kind of things, and nothing had ever really helped. I'd gone to church. I'd done different spiritual whatever, but nothing had ever worked for me. And the first time I worked the steps, I did it as much to prove that the steps wouldn't work. And because my sponsor, you know, as Catherine said, I had felt like I had to. And I did it, and I was shocked. Halfway through, my life started to get better. And so I was pretty much hooked. I don't think I ever considered walking away from the program after that. I stayed. Matthew eventually went to prison. He was institutionalized for 6 months. He got out of institution. I think he might have been some better, but they had not begun to crack that armor. And so before too long, he went to prison. And I want to tell you that it is the best thing that could have ever happened to him. He was there for a couple of years. When Matthew got out of prison, I picked him up. He said, I will never do anything that will risk me going back to a place like that again. And as far as I know, he never has. Matthew met and married a very nice girl. They have a reasonably happy relationship. They've got a couple of kids. We're not close now, but I love him. I think he loves me, and we see each other occasionally. I met and married Tom in the program. I kept getting better jobs. The longer I was in the program, my life just kept getting better, better and better. After a few years in the program, Tom and I started having some problems. He had some health issues, and I think I had gone as far as I could go in the program at that time. I brought all of me with me to the program, and so I had all my habits or whatever. I had to, for me, I had to walk away from my loving network of my network of recovery people. I had to walk away from them. I kept going to meetings, but I kind of drifted around the program for about 5 years. And Tom and I were separated for 5 years. Now, I had already been through two failed marriages, and Tom and I didn't get a divorce. And we kept kept in touch, and we kept seeing each other. And he kept working his program, I kept working my program. And it took me about 5 years to realize that they weren't the problem, that I was the problem. I went back to that group. Now, this group of women, they let me walk away from that group. They didn't beg me to stay. They didn't try to talk me out of it. And when I decided I wanted to come back, they allowed me to come back, and they loved me back into our circle. So even though I had been in that meeting, in with that circle of friends, I'm still off the radar kind of person. I am still, it's nearly impossible for me to share. And my sponsor, when I came back, I switched sponsors to Barbara. And Barbara and Catherine were both very, very loving and never tried to force me ahead of schedule, ahead of what I could do. But for some reason, 4 or 5 years ago, I was able to get up in front of this big group of women and share for the very first time under my own steam. And it was like breaking through the sound barrier for me. So it, and it only, there's hope, it only took me 20 years in the program to get to that point. And when I went into therapy, when I was having anxiety attacks, I think I saw her for about 3 years, and after about 3 years, she helped me a little bit, and my anxiety was better. She said, I have never been interviewed for 3 years. And so I, in kind of a weird way, I think I kind of interviewed the program for about 20 years. But for me, I had, from the way I was raised, I had absolutely no ability to trust. And I just didn't, I guess I just didn't believe that that you were who I needed you to be. So 4 or 5 years ago, I get up in front and I finally share. And my program, I had always thought I was an introvert because I had this fear of public speaking. It turns out I'm not an introvert. I just have a thing about public speaking. So, I mean, my life just started changing dramatically. The way I shared in meetings changed. I just can't say enough about how different my life was. And it kept getting better and better. And I got better and better jobs. I worked for a major corporation. Like I said, we're not supposed to say, but I love logistics. And so my life was really great. My life was good enough. And have you ever had that thought? And I have several times had this thought about the program. I got it. I got this. I understand the program. And so now, looking back, I think that that thought should come with a warning message. Right after the roundup last year, my sponsor asked me if I would be willing to share this year at Roundup, and I try to, and this is my network of recovery friends. We try to never, and we encourage each other to never say no to service. And no matter, so I didn't want to say no, but I knew I couldn't do it. I knew I could not get up here in this size of auditorium with this many people. I don't know all you. I know my trusted network, but I just knew in my heart of hearts I couldn't do that. I thought it was a crazy idea, and I thought it was crazy for me to say yes. When I share in Al-Anon meetings, I leave a lot of my past out. When I'm in Al-Anon meetings, I share Al-Anon-y things. When you tell your story, if you're going to be transparent and honest, I can't leave it out. I don't like sharing all that stuff about me. It's not the image that I like to present. So I said that I would do it, and knowing I wasn't capable of it. And so now remember, I had just had that thought. I got this. I got this program. And so I had to start at the basics all over again. I had to start working the steps on my fear of public speaking. And everybody I talked to said, by the way, it's not about public speaking. And I thought, well, it looks like it's about public speaking. So last year has been a year of transformation for me. Not that I think I would not have reached this transformation without it, but it certainly has catapulted me into a new reality. It's been the year of step 11 and 12 for me. I went back and sought outside help, which I'm a strong believer in. I started going back to therapy and seeing a therapist occasionally again. I had always wanted to study this other spiritual program that is not a religion, A Course in Miracles, and so I did that. I made a one-year commitment to go to classes for A Course in Miracles, And my corporation, I'm really lucky. They have a Toastmasters meeting right in my building. I had tried to join Toastmasters 4 times. I had never given a speech. I had never spoken in front of the group. I could not get out of my chair. But I, yet one more time, I joined Toastmasters at work. I mean, I had to kick my program up. And I did it in true Al-Anon fashion. And I'm only hitting the tip of the iceberg. The things that I did to get myself prepared to even think that I could get up here and do this. So right after I made that decision, right after I said, oh, I gotta kick my program up, Catherine was going to go to Paducah and tell her story. I said, I'll go. In my circle of gals, no one travels alone. Nobody goes and tells their story alone. Nobody does anything alone in my group. And so 4 of us went to Paducah to support Catherine in her story. And by the way, Catherine loves to say, and it's where I heard it first, don't ever let good enough get in the way of great. And so Catherine was going to go tell her story. I go with her. It's an Al-Anon convention with AA participation. And so when the AA speaker got up to tell his story, he said, you know, I've been in the program a really, really long time. And I've very seldom ever told my story. I hate my story. I don't hear my story in other AA talks. Other AA talks don't really resonate for me because I was a drug smuggler in the 80s. I said, wait a minute. I went and I found him at the lunch break, and I said, we got to take this on the road. The AA and Al-Anon version of drug smuggling in the 80s. I thought it was a great idea. His wife was not crazy about it. So that's kind of how my life is. You know, God shows up. God takes me to Paducah. It's just, God's weird. God's a weird guy. So one of the other things that I did for my program was Course in Miracles. And I don't hear anything there that I don't hear here. There is no conflict for me. The program tells me I have a power greater than myself. And the Course tells me I am one with that power. And the program teaches me how to get in contact with that power. What do I have to do to clear the block between me and my higher power? And so I was in a meditation at one of our classes a couple months ago, and it was a great meditation. And everybody was having these great meditative experiences, and all I got was offense. And it was like everybody else was having all this great stuff, and I just passed when it was my turn because I didn't get the fence thing. So as everybody shared, before everybody got finished sharing, I remembered where I had seen that fence. So when my dad had come back when I was 7, and I just met him, I was thrilled to meet him, when I was introduced to him, for the very first time, that very first day, he was standing on the other side of that fence. And when I met him, I was a pretty normal kid. I was bouncy, kind of goofy, happy kid. But when I met him, and I was thrilled to meet him, he's a special guy, within the very first day of meeting him, I did some little normal 7-year-old annoyance. And he turned around and slapped the ever-loving daylights out of me. I mean, he knocked me into next week. And he did that in front of everybody I knew and loved. And nobody helped me. And I was terrified. And it's not like no one helped me in that moment. Nobody ever helped me with that. No one ever talked about it. You know, it was like the elephant in the living room. And I've come to believe that elephants in the living room poop. And it just gets worse over the years. And so I had forgotten about that. I had forgotten about that event. It had never made it on a fourth step, never made it on a fifth step, never taught my sponsor about it. And in that moment, in that class a couple of months ago, when I remembered that, I promise you, I could hardly get it out of my mouth. It was so painful to remember it. And I had never connected those dots between I'm very, very quiet, I'm off the radar, and that particular event. I made a decision back then. It was, for me, it was a survival decision, and I had forgotten about it. But here's the thing. I had been living with a 7-year-old decision the rest of my life. I hadn't had the opportunity or realized I needed to go back and could go back and rethink that decision. I can't tell you how much it helped me to connect those dots. So when Barbara and Catherine thought it'd be a great idea for me to tell my story here today, at that moment, I wasn't aware that a year ago, I didn't even know my story. This year of transformation helps me understand me better and how I got that way. I can't tell you how drastically my life has changed this last year. Last year, when we made this decision for me to get up here, I was looking at retiring within the year and really looking forward to it. Life was good. But a few months ago, someone in my company came to me and asked me to interview for a promotion. And the promotion looked like my ideal job. Like if I could describe the perfect job for me, it would have been this job. And so I interviewed for it. A lot of people interviewed for it. It was a very big promotion. And the hiring manager said, you know, you're the best candidate for this job, but this is a very, very visible position. You'll be in front of the highest level of management, and there's a huge community that you'll be in front of. And so because, she said, I didn't even know you existed. You were so quiet in this company. I've been here for 17 years. She said, I didn't even know that you were here. Someone had to tell me to go look at you because you were pretty good at your job. So I don't know if this is a good fit for you. I told her I didn't defend myself, and I didn't ask her to do I didn't talk to her about her decision other than to tell her I knew it had to be a difficult decision for her. Well, she hired me for that job, and my life at my company has changed so much. I literally mentor and sponsor people at work. They pay me to do that. I'm an officer on Toastmasters now at work, and people in the company that know me and know what's happened with me. So being very, very quiet at work in my field is very self-limiting, very career-limiting. And so I have managers all around my company calling me, I got another one for you. And so I'm willing to walk my coworkers out of being invisible if they're willing to do that. But you want to talk about rewarding? I love going to work. I love my job. My community at work has gone from just kind of a small community to a huge community. A lot of my relationships have changed. I've always had a lot of loving recovery women in my life. I've always had a lot, but I've never dreamed that I would have enough room in my heart to love as many people in my life as I do today. It's just, I just thought I had enough. I have a super relationship with my family. My family, we're all planning an extended trip to Europe this fall. I feel so blessed. Of everybody that we know, my family, we would rather be together for an adventure like this than with anybody else. My husband and I took a couple of guys into our home over the last year of new recovery, and the Big Book tells us how to do that. I don't recommend it. We brought two. One of them actually lived in the house. The other one was in an awful lot of in the home in our home a lot. We welcomed these guys in our home and in our lives and into our hearts. And both these guys have gone back out. But staying sober was not a condition for us. We love these guys. One of them will be getting out of jail sometime this year. The other one's, I think, in the hospital right now. But I believe that God prepares us for what we need to do, and we learn so much from those guys. My mom was going to return from Tennessee. My mom's 90 years old. She was going to move in with us. And those guys don't hold a candle to what it's like dealing with my mother. She is hell on wheels, and dealing with new recovery really helped us with that. Recently, I had to say to my own mother, "You cannot act this way in my home, or you're going to have to leave." That was a long time coming, needed to be said. And I want to tell you, I did it from a place of love, not attack. I'll tell you that my mom and I today have a little fledgling of a relationship that I never thought we could have. For the most part of my life, my mom hardly knew I existed. She needed me for whatever, but we did not have a relationship. We do now, and I think we love each other a little bit. So we hear in Al-Anon a lot about stay inside your own hula hoop. I'm not supposed to get on the other side of that hula hoop. I'm not supposed to get in your business. I'm supposed to stay in my business. And that's tricky. That's a hard thing to learn. But my year, this year, what I've learned is God gave me a really big hula hoop. And I'm not supposed to live in that part of it. I'm supposed to take up all the room in the hula hoop, right up to that edge. If I don't show up, all of me, God can't work through me. I started out by reading about service, and for me, every time I'm asked to do service, my first thought is, I cannot do this. Whether it's to sponsor somebody, to get up and tell my story, be of service in a group, my first thought is always, I can't do it. And I have to work the steps harder. I have to work my program harder if I'm going to be of maximum service. But that's where my recovery is. And that's just my story. That's where my recovery is in being of service. You know, I love being around babies. When babies, the light burns brightly. And then whatever happens, happens. And that light gets hidden. But it cannot be extinguished. And I've lived most of my life with a decision that I made when I was 7. And who I was got covered up, an awful lot of it. And it's been a long time getting back. But today, my life, my goal, instead of staying off the, I have a new mission statement, to live life deeply, fully, and unapologetically. Sandy Beach loved to say his goal was to be as present. How present in my life can I be? And I love that. I love that for a goal. Today, I have the best sister in the world. I have the sweetest husband. My husband's perfect for me. I have the best friends in the world. My sponsor's the very best. And I know that they're not really the best in the world. They're the best for me because God gave me. That's what God gave me. And today I'm able to recognize it. I want to read a little something. Teresa of Avila received a vision of a crystal castle inside the human soul with God the Beloved at its center. The journey to union with the Beloved is a journey home to the center of ourselves. The human soul is so glorious that God himself chooses it as his dwelling place. The path to God, then, leads us on a journey of self-discovery. To know the self is to know God. So don't let good enough stand in the way of great. I did it!